your Canada Day?
Good. We had a barbecue.
Yes.
Did some heavy drinking. Listened to Canadian music way too late into the night. I had a great Canadian playlist going, though, so pretty pumped about that. Some 9 hours of pure chins. So that's how I see us doing it now. We'll just wander into the podcast like that, as if they just caught us mid-conversation.
I like it.
All right. This is the Montreal Bias, official podcast of Rabbit Habs Magazine. The first podcast we've done of the post-PK Subban era. This one will be called Post-PK Depression, as they might all be called.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I've got myself a big beverage. Taking a swig. If this is the first time listening, thanks for finding us. I'm sure it was your need to get a little bit more off your chest or out of your ears about PK. I think we're all still reeling. I know I am.
Yeah, consider this your support group, because
it's rough.
We're
going to get into some heavy stuff on this one, right?
Yeah, a little bit. It's it still doesn't seem real. It's still like, you know, 25, you know, 30 years as a sports fan, whatever it is, cheering for a couple different teams across the different sports. And I think this is about the worst it's gotten. I can't think of anything more on the field or off the field or on the ice or off the ice. I think this is about as heartbreaking as it gets.
That sad bastard right there, that's Sean O'Neill. You can find him on Twitter at...
I guess the Expos leaving was worse.
I did want to get into that. I'm Zach, by the way. You can find me at Zach Drops Tweets.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. we got so much sadness to get into, but I think off the top, first of all, for those who've been listening to the Montreal Bias and the 2-4 in its various iterations over the years may recognize that we often did the 12-pack or various other kind of gimmicks for the conversation. Kind of switching the podcast up a little. We're going to be doing shorter podcasts now. Hopefully. We're going to try to. And we're also going to be eliminating the 12-pack. We're just going to be a couple guys just chatting.
Yeah, it's like when Spinal Tap turned into like a freeform jazz band when they were opening for that puppet show. Kind of the same idea.
This is our opening for puppet shows. Podcast is about the same sadness as opening for a goddamn puppet show. So I'm trying to put myself in the right headspace for this one. This is the podcast we never honestly thought we'd have to do.
No, I honestly never thought it would happen. There's always the whispers. And I guess there's never that much smoke without a little bit of a fire, but I never thought it would come to this. If nothing else, I thought, I didn't really doubt that Bergevin was stupid enough to do it. I was absolutely convinced that Therrien was stupid enough to do it. I didn't think Molson was dumb enough to pull the trigger. And I always thought that was kind of the insurance that he would just veto any trade because he knew what he had in PK, but apparently that wasn't the case. And here we are. But yeah, I never actually thought that day was going to come.
Absolutely not. I mean, we've called each other on, we've been roommates. We have, we're close. We text frequently, but the amount of times one of us has called the other on the phone, a handful of times in our life.
Yeah.
I can remember.
Especially like within the last, you know.
Since texting's been a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we also talk during hockey season for an hour and a half like this every week, but point being, we don't call each other often. Last time I called you, I know for a fact, was the day PK signed the 8-year deal.
Yep.
In jubilation. That required a phone call. And then, so I'm at work on Wednesday. And there hadn't really been, like, bubblings of this, right? Wednesday.
You know, there was the rumors before the draft, and then it didn't happen, and there was the press conference where he didn't come out and say, I'm not going to do it, but at least, you know, it seemed like, you know, we were over the hump, and then we're going to get to the July 1st and the no move would kick in, and like it didn't seem like it was going to happen.
No, I Backtrack on the way to work that day. I'm driving it, and for some reason, maybe just looking for some happiness, I started thinking about the great PK moment of him coming out of the penalty box and shooting down the ice to score against the Bruins in the playoffs. And I remember I was at, Real Sports in downtown Toronto watching it. And the place, even though it was Toronto, obviously they weren't in the playoffs, the place blew up. And I'm just kind of reliving that memory. I think I started reliving that memory because I realized it was June 30th, that we were into the final countdown, or June 29th, I suppose. We're in the final countdown, final hours in which we had to deal with the bullshit of would they or wouldn't they trade PK. Cut to, I don't know, sometime that afternoon. I don't know exactly what time it was. I had my head down, getting shit done, and my phone rings and your name comes up. And immediately I thought, either something tragic has happened to someone we actually know, or
something tragic did happen.
Or the Montreal Canadiens have traded PK Subban. And I picked up.
If there was something actually tragic, I would have been like Frank Costanza and just been like, George is dead, call me back.
That's so true. But this was much worse. And I think in the line you delivered to me was, he's gone, which is dramatic. But I also knew what you were talking about. Mostly because it wasn't like we were sitting by waiting for someone to die. That would have been a weird call for you to go. Who? Bad news. But it was, I believed you. Obviously, you wouldn't fuck with me on something so serious. But at the same time, I didn't believe you. And I still don't believe you.
Yeah, because the news broke around, 3 o'clock, I think? I want to say. And it was, around 2:30, there was the Taylor Hall trade. So, that popped up on my phone. I was like, that's pretty fucking stupid. Glad I'm not an Edmonton fan.
Yeah, again.
Back to the rest of my day.
Oh, and then Stamkos returns to Tampa. And I'm like, fuck you, Toronto. Perfect. Beautiful. Love it.
And then, I'm walking to the bank and my phone goes off and I just kind of look at it. And I saw PK's name. And I kind of just ignored I kind of knew what it was. I was like, I'm just going to pretend that didn't happen. And then there's two or three more notifications. And I was like, okay, that wasn't a typo. That wasn't, they weren't speculating. It's gone. It happened. And then I just spent the next hour, I don't know if I've ever done so many texts in my life. It's just the next hour. I was just texting with everyone and looking at Twitter and just hoping that it was there's a mistake or whoever failed his physical or PMHL vetoed it or God knows what, but
I know. I was praying for something that wasn't going to come.
It still hasn't really set in, but for a couple of days, it really, really didn't set in.
It probably won't set in until we see him in preseason skating with Nashville while Shea Weber skates for us.
Yeah.
We'll get to Shea Weber. We'll get to a whole bunch of shit, because that is far from the only thing that's happened. Naturally leads to a big moment, a sad moment in some ways in our podcast history. You are renouncing officially your Habs fandom. You're becoming an agnostic hockey fan in the wake of this. Is that true?
I mean, that was my gut reaction. I think that was a lot of people's gut reaction.
Oh, yeah. You could see it on.
I never want to say never because I know myself. At some point, I will probably, the Habs have meant a lot to me for a long, long time, and I doubt I will never be a Habs fan again, although it's possible. But right now, at the very least, while current management's in place, I'm going to have a hard time cheering for this team. I a complete agnostic? I don't know if I can just, it's like the end of a marriage. You can't just throw it away. It doesn't just disappear immediately, but the Habs and I are in a weird place right now.
There's a good chance you just really enjoy being agnostic.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you can just enjoy the best parts of the sport.
I mean, we say it every year once the Habs inevitably get eliminated from the playoffs, right? Actually, this is kind of more fun because I don't really care who wins. I'm just watching the game and watching it for the game itself. I don't think I'll be cheering for Montreal Canadiens this season. I really don't think I'll be cheering for them as long as Marc Bergevin and Michel Therrien are around. And it's possible that I'm, you know, the era of me being at least a diehard Habs fan might be done.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment.
And I don't know, like, maybe, you know, maybe I'm full of shit. Maybe by 10 games I'm completely back in. You know, maybe they go on a playoff run and I'm back in. Maybe come January I'm watching every Nashville game. Who knows?
It will be.
I'm out there. I'm playing the field. I'm available, teams. Call me.
Get on Hockey Team Tinder.
Yeah, Hockey Tinder.
Actually, I think it's Grindr. I think it's Grindr for hockey teams. Wait, you gotta love Grindr. You gotta love Grindr.
Loads up on the Grindrs.
Allow me to have a sip. So that's interesting. That'll be something at least you can pay attention to, listeners, our dear listeners.
Yeah, I'm a free agent. This could go in multiple directions.
I'm excited about it because now I get to be the bias of the Montreal Bias, and you can maybe come at it more level-headed than we have traditionally. Or maybe with some just... maybe what would be best, and I would like the most out of you being hockey agnostic, and this is about me in many ways, is if you just became the most pragmatic watcher possible.
That'd be nice.
And could just, you know, level me every time I say something stupid.
Once I get to the acceptance phase of the grieving process, that could be a possibility.
Could be zen as fuck.
I mean, my initial reaction was like, fuck it, I'm going to become a Leafs fan or a Bruins fan. That's how much I hate this team right now.
I did.
After about 4 hours, but...
Yeah, there was a moment where I was like, am I a fucking Leafs fan now? Maybe I am. Died down.
So, yeah, I'm going to see what it's like to be a Nashville Predators fan living in Ottawa, Ontario.
Living the dream, baby. I will say the Preds have overstepped the Jets as my second favorite team and my favorite Western Conference team. I'm all in on the Preds.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty fun team to watch now. I mean, A, Green my favorite City. Player of all time is playing there, and then, you know, B, you've got him and Josie and Ekholm and Ellis on the blue line, plus Forsberg and Johansson up front.
Plus, road trips to Nashville are going to be the best.
Road trips to Nashville. Like,
that's
going to
be
Nashville
so fun.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, so we got Vegas and Nashville now as options.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not really a Vegas guy, I don't think. I've never been, but I don't feel like Vegas is for me. I hate gambling.
Yeah, it's never appealed to me all that much.
Not big on prostitutes.
Take them or leave them.
No, I understand. I mean, you don't want to commit. Quick marriages? Maybe. Maybe you could talk me into that one. Vegas hockey, though, that could be fun.
I'm actually cautiously optimistic about the Vegas thing.
Yeah, I would say I am.
There's an 85% chance it's a disaster.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Exactly. I do kind of get why they wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it works, it's going to be fucking cool.
It's probably smarter than, like, Phoenix.
Yep.
Probably smarter than Carolina.
Yep.
So, anyway, back to Nashville. My new second favorite team. They've always been one of those teams. Well, not always. That's a stretch. But for some time now, they've been one of those teams who, if it weren't for the fact that they were in Nashville, they'd be easy to like. But now I've learned a lot more about Nashville, especially with the All-Star game. It seems like a really kind of a solid hockey town. They've got their own hipster thing going on. It's definitely a really fun town to visit. And you know what? They've now got a legit superstar who pukes charisma, and also he's black and they're in the South, and that's going to be huge. I mean, it was a no-brainer for them. It was Montreal who, I know we got Shea Weber, and as I say, we will get to Shea Weber, but I'm finding it very, very difficult, as much as you can talk yourself into Shea Weber, to understand from a marketing standpoint how you get rid of this guy.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, Nashville doesn't have this suffocating history and this suffocating arrogance. I don't think they're going to really give a shit if name on the back of a sweater is, you know, sort of outshining that oh-so-sacred crest on the front. Like, I think they're going to let PK be PK, which is what, you know, most smart teams do, but Montreal gets caught up in its own bullshit too much. They're gonna love him there.
Oh my god!
And I know it's, you know,
great.
He's going from a hockey mad market to a still sort of a fledgling, you know, type marketplace. But you know, off the ice, they're going to let him be PK, and on the ice, like, Laviolette might be the best coach in the league for him, except for Boudreau or something. So, yeah. On the ice, it's going to be fun. Off the ice, it's going to be fun. Like, we can already see, like, you know, I can already see those first promotional pictures of PK with the guitar and the cowboy hat. And,
oh my God.
You know, the first video he shoots with Garth Brooks or Kenny Chesney, or I don't know. I can't really name that many country stars, but you know what I mean.
How long before Price demands a trade to join him down there?
How much would Kerry love living in Nashville?
Right? That, I think he'd probably prefer Dallas, actually. Because Nashville's, like, actually cool country, and Dallas is more like Kerry Price country, pickup truck country. No offense.
God, imagine PK in Dallas.
Yeah, that would be lethal, but he can't move now. Luck, Nashville can't move him now. Or does the no-trade... I've never understood. In some deals, the no-trade doesn't follow, and some it does.
Yeah, and I actually haven't read... I'm under the impression that it did follow him, but I'm not 100% sure on that. Even like when the trade was initially announced, there was also some confusion as to whether the you know Nashville would be on the hook for the cap recapture stuff, or if the Habs would. Thankfully, it's Nashville and not Montreal.
But. Yeah, which somebody pointed out, and apologies, I should be able to give credit where credit is due here, but the genius, most Machiavellian plan possible is... force Shea Weber into retirement. It goes off Nashville's books right at the moment that PK is a free agent again. So they can't afford to re-sign him. We bring him back. Obviously not Bergevin. We're far beyond him at this point. But there's hope someday that fucking Nashville will allow us to bring PK home.
Yeah. You do wonder if, I mean, that's like the first thought almost is, you know, would he ever want to come back? Because we're going to have a new GM within the next year or two. We're going to have an ex-coach within the next 6 months to a year.
Or we're like 7 years away, so.
Yeah. would he ever come back? Because he obviously loved it here. You know, Patrick Reddy will be in jail for insider trading by the time PK's contract's up. So would he come back, or is it, you know, do you never come back from something like this?
Is it too far out for this prediction here, as I prognosticate? PK Subban will retire as a member of the Montreal Canadiens.
That would be nice. That
like maybe it's only like a finish the career, you know, whoop-de-doo, yeah. Basil, but put that out there. Just because of only because of the Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going, on the other hand, he's probably going to get a cup or two in Nashville. He's going to become a big American star. At the end of this contract, maybe he goes, what, he doesn't know, sure as shit doesn't know Montreal. Maybe at the end of this contract, he goes and retires as a Maple Leaf.
Yep.
Very possible now. It's all, anyway, for my full opinion, you can check out Rabbit Habs. I wrote an article about PK being the perfect superstar for Montreal. That's my, you know, my earliest thoughts on that. I needed to collect my, I was such a sullen teenager on Thursday night. I literally came up to the attic, which is where we record the podcast from and where I have my big screen. I just sat there and I drank some fine Woodford Reserve. I used my prescription from the good people at the Green Room. I blared some brand new, I was glad to have some brand new music from a band that's not new, but I've newly discovered, called Car Seat Headrest, to really lose myself in. Moped around, wrote, blogged, you know, blogged angrily, and that's how I got through it. But it, yeah, I've put everything I thought into, well, then, or at least my immediate reaction into that. Very, I just feel like we've been robbed. PK is going to be fine, as we've said. Really, who's been robbed here is us, the fans of the Montreal Canadiens, who are watching just a magnificent legacy play out, I think. Something we could tell our grandkids about, and now, fuck it, it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, if you're lucky, you get a player like that once every 20 years. If that, like, you know, in my lifetime as a Habs fan, there's no one that's really come close to matching PK in terms of on ice and off ice appeal and connection with the city and connection with the fans.
And it's crazy.
Lowry was the last one, and before that, if you're talking about non goalies, I mean, you really have to go back to LeFleur.
Yep. And
you know,
I mean, he's
all
not
due
even
respect to Zaku and Kovalev and a few others, but no one, and I don't think this is recency bias. Like no one I can think of really came even close.
What about all due respect to Carey Price?
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, PK's not even the best player on this team. Or isn't, obviously, no longer. He's not on this team.
No, that's
but
that, true.
But that's crazy, is I think you could have traded Carey and there would have been less of a reaction. I honestly think that.
This is maybe stupid, but like as a fan, I would have been less upset.
You know what? Because, and we're going to post...
We just saw Matt Mertin when lead a team to a Stanley Cup, by the way.
Yeah, that's my point. We're going to post in the next coming days a new edition of the forum in which we've discussed, you know, seeing that the goalie maybe isn't crucial to being a Stanley Cup winner anymore. Where, you know, is Carey Price not over? Wow, is he overvalued? Are we paying too much for the goalie position, no matter how good he is? And so we'll have that forum up for all our contributors to debate about it. But that's exactly it. That's why I probably would have been less upset with a Carey Price trade, is because if the team's well constructed, you can probably win with an okay goalie. But giving up a player like PK Subban, the return has to be so astronomical that even a player of Shea Weber's standing seems like we were shortchanged. I'm pretty confident we were shortchanged.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you almost feel bad for, like, Carey to a certain extent and Shea Weber. Like, you know, those are two possible future Hall of Famers. But the thing about PK is just everyone gets, you know, everyone sort of gets diminished in comparison. And I think that was part of the problem, right? Like, no one ever really said that PK was an asshole.
Nope.
They just said he was, you know, the presence of PK Subban just so drastically outmatched, you know, it sort of blotted out everything in its wake that nothing else could grow type thing. Just the hugeness of his personality was so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it leads to things like us saying, you know, yeah, Carey Price is maybe the best player in the world, but I'd still rather trade him than PK.
It's ridiculous. The whole thing, our thoughts, probably how we feel about it's not even quite gauged right. And because this isn't, or might not be, quite the Patrick Roy trade. But that all depends on how good Shea Weber is. And because we're trying to keep this relatively short, let's get into the Shea Weber thing. We said our piece on PK. We'll probably air those grievances time and time again forever on this podcast.
Yes. I can guarantee you it's going to, like, the entire theme of the podcast this season is after every loss. Well, you know, if we had PK, that wouldn't happen.
Oh, we'll give Nashville updates. You're going to know what PK's up to all season. It's going to be tremendously annoying.
I guarantee you the man wins the Norris Trophy this year.
Yeah, one final thing on PK. So you're saying guaranteed Norris. I'm thinking we're looking at there's such a strong chance we are looking at the exact same thing as Post-Roy, Stanley Cup year one.
That's entirely possible. The West is a bit more open than it used to be. That team is stacked now.
That team's good. They could have made a run this year.
Yep.
If they'd had a defenseman who was a little better than Shea Weber. Oh, fuck.
And, I mean, you think how motivated and how great PK was the year after the first contract stalemate where he goes and wins the Norris. I feel like it's going to be the same thing. I feel like he's going to be incredibly motivated. I feel like he's going to be playing in a system that really highlights his strengths. And it's a great story. And sports writers love great stories. Like, I can just definitely see him going there to Nashville and winning the Norris in his first season and all of us just kind of slamming our heads against our desks.
The press is going to find the grandiose PK Subban less annoying now that he's in Nashville and now that he's not a Montreal Canadian, because now it doesn't come with the stink of the Habs.
You know, well, won't be three stories a week about how Howie Morenz never behaved this way.
I don't believe Howie Morenz did play that way. that's that. We'll put that halfway to bed, but bring it up a lot as the season comes. Let's talk about Shea Weber, the guy we did get back. And if this is really this argument of who's better at this moment is certainly split on how you feel about advanced stats in hockey.
Yeah.
My question to you is not, is PK better than Shea Weber? Because let's just go forward here presenting the fact that at this moment, PK Subban is a better defenseman than Shea Weber. But is Shea Weber as weak and perhaps on the downside of his career to the same extent some have made it seem, or are we actually getting a really good defenseman in Shea Weber? He's a lock for Team Canada, which PK is not on. That's the traditional Mike Babcock look. But this is what I can't even decide. If there's any chance this isn't a huge mistake and it's just a slight mistake or a reasonably large mistake.
I think for the next 2 years, it could be a draw. I mean, Weber, when we talk about Weber's struggles, it's really last year that we're talking about. There was a bit of a slip off the season before, but it was really only this past season, I think, where people, and especially the stats folks, noticed a pretty significant decline in his play. That being said, he's only 30, and sometimes people just have bad seasons, right?
Very true.
And, you know, if you told me, not all that long ago, you know, if you absolutely have to trade PK, who would you want in return? I would have said either Weber or Doughty.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I think it's possible Weber has a bounce back season. I'm not willing to write him off. I mean, he's only 30. He's still got the tools there.
Defenseman age decent.
Sorry, what was that?
I say defenseman age decently.
Yeah, exactly. Defenseman age decently. I mean, Chera was, I think, 29 when he signed with Boston.
That's true.
You know, Pronger played really well late into his career. Like, would it shock me if Weber has a bit of a renaissance and if we sort of misunderstood the numbers a little bit and we over-exaggerated his regression and Weber has another, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 really good seasons? Like, I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility.
No, and he does score 20 on the power play.
Yep.
He has been proven to actually be a more effective power play defenseman than PK based on where they each take their shots. It seems bona fide as a true leader.
Yep.
And a guy that guys follow. Perhaps should replace a college boy as a captain.
Yeah, I would have no problem with that.
I know you wouldn't. So, I mean, in the intangible department, he seems like a massive get. But I don't know how to measure those intangibles against, you know, what's actually done on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, if it was any other circumstances and you told me that we got Shea Weber, I mean, you'd all be ecstatic,
oh,
right?
My God, yes.
And I do feel bad for the guy because he's taken a beating since the trade.
Yeah, he really has. Hopefully that motivates
him. Anything short of bringing this team to Stanley Cup, he'll always be the guy we traded for PK Subban. And I think we are overlooking, you know, Bergevin did say, you know, it's going to take a hell of a lot for me to trade PK. And he was right about that. And that's the one thing that makes it a little bit different than the Lua trade is, you know, we didn't trade him for Justin Thibeau and a bag of pucks. Like,
yeah, as long as he's not on the serious decline. That's my biggest fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he shouldn't be. He actually shouldn't be.
He shouldn't be. My gut is that he just kind of had a down-ish season.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, wasn't that bad.
No, he still scored.
Like, I think reports of his demise have been greatly exaggerated.
I hope so. I really fucking hope so.
Yeah.
That's a big contract.
Yeah, that to me is the worst part of the, I mean, besides trading PK, you know, the worst part of it from a team building standpoint. Like I said, maybe it's a draw for the next year or two if we get really lucky. Maybe it's a draw for 3 or 4 seasons. But you're trading PK's, what is it, 27 through 32 seasons for Weber's 30 through 41 seasons?
Something like that, yeah.
For essentially, I mean, save $1 million a season. But
it's not nothing, but it's as close to nothing as you can get.
Yeah.
As far as these contracts go.
Yeah, I still think Weber has a couple good seasons in him, but man, come in age 34, 35, 36 onwards, like, that could be pretty ugly.
How old's Chara, though? Chara's 30, what, 8?
They'll be getting close to that, yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if he's sort of, not quite Chara, because that was a truly dominant player. But, you know, a diet version of Chara. He could age that way. We'll find out.
Yeah, I think that's the best case scenario.
Yeah, that's best case.
The best, you know, the best case plausible scenario.
I mean, 6 years ago, Shea Weber and Zdeno were the two kings of the NHL when it came to blue liners. But that was 6 years ago. I don't know what Shea Weber is.
Oh, even 2 years ago.
That's true. He's a great defenseman. I hope.
Even now, if you ask him to list the top five defensemen in the league, he might still make it.
You think so?
I know his possession numbers weren't good last year, but he's still Shea Weber, and he's still only 30.
I hope so. We'll find out. Obviously. Stay fucking tuned.
Yeah, he's such an interesting case, because, like, if there's one guy who the eye test is going to overrate, it's going to be Shea Weber.
Yep, that's
100%. So he's 6'3", 225, has 110-mile-per-hour slap shot. Might be the biggest hitter in the league. If you're going to fall in love with a guy based on tape, it's going to be him. And it's possible that some of that highlight reel stuff has hidden the possession numbers for a while, but he is a really special player.
Or at least
he was, and I think he can still be.
I also think it's possible that that stuff matters a little. And I'm not trying to talk myself into this trade. No matter what, I'm always going to say we got the... Well, not no matter what. I suppose if Montreal's lifting the Stanley Cup next season because of the gravitas, as I've said before, of Shea Weber, then fucking A. You're a genius, Marc Bergevin. Turns out PK was maybe the issue. We got Carey Price, the great leader in good times, Max Pacioretty, and Shea Weber, who's, bringing it all down, getting these guys united, playing a Michel Therrien system, and that's enough to deliver a cup. With Alex Galchenyuk evolving to the next level, you got Max Pacioretty, you've added Shaw in the deal. Maybe that happens. I don't expect that to happen, and I will gladly applaud Bergevin's genius if it does. So maybe that's what the future holds. But short of that, and short of literally that, I'm never going to talk myself into liking this trade. I can talk myself into, at best, thinking Shea Weber's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
And being happy with what he brings to the table. But he's always going to be the reminder that we traded PK. It's going to be very hard for him now.
Yeah, it will be. Like you said, at best it's a draw unless they win the cup. The only other thing I think that could flip the narrative on it is if, in 2 years' time, if you start hearing whispers in Nashville that they're getting sick of PK as well, then maybe I'll start to put a bit of stock into the character stuff. But
Patrick Roy was the fucking biggest asshole possible. I still would have kept him.
Yep, that's true.
I mean, he was bigger than the team and an actual dick.
One set of rules for Lawrence Taylor and an entirely different set of rules for the rest of the team. And maybe it's not the most democratic thing in the world, but I do think talent trumps character, whatever that even means.
For sure. And
I also think that's been overblown.
Oh, it's getting the boss.
I mean, who knows? I'm not in the room, but it really seems like there's, the character assassination really started after the fact, as it always does in Montreal.
You know what I actually think? I think PK is PK. We've seen what he is. And that is perhaps a little, not even a little bigger than need be, but he's going to self-promote. PK loves him some PK.
Yes.
Absolutely no denying that. PK is always going to be looking out for PK. Absolutely no denying that. I think Montreal hit its grind in December. We all recall that. We all saw it coming. At least you and I saw it coming.
7 years ago.
Long time ago. That's the same moment the 24/7 or whatever it is, rolls in, and PK puts on the PK show to its max. There's no denying that if you watched it. So maybe that rubs some people the wrong way, especially with the camera crews around all the time, making it easy to agitate. A bunch of people trying to bitch and moan about the camera crews, PK milking it, loving it, being part of it. The team's losing, PK keeps putting that smile on, wearing fancy coats in.
Yeah,
it probably started to go that way at that point. And this is the one. Let's make this our final note. The real kick in the nuts of the whole goddamn thing is if Carey Price doesn't get hurt, PK Subban does not get traded.
Yep.
Because That December slide isn't so bad. Things don't go cross-eyed in the room. Carey Price, the true captain, is there every day and keeps his fucking foot on things. Instead, you've got one guy who feels slighted that he wasn't the captain. No doubt about that. PK wanted to be the captain. He's going to be big when the TV cameras are on. He doesn't necessarily agree with Patch's way in the dark moments. So there's anger in the room because there's anger anytime at any organization things go poorly. I think Bergevin and Therrien never liked him. I think they saw finally they could make an argument to Molson that they could get rid of him because he's a, you know, yep. He's this sudden new poison cancer in the room. There's enough truth to it that because PK is such just a huge black hole when it comes to people wanting to pay, like it just sucks in everything around him. So immediately the media jumps on this. As soon as they hear smoke, PK Subban, beautiful. We're there. They tell the story. Bergevin has his whole bed made for him on convincing Molson that he's the problem. Everybody gets sucked into it. We saw what happened with the trade rumors leading up to the draft. And there's enough there for Bergevin to pull the trigger. And then immediately, and part of this is we just want to feel better about the trade. We all start to eat up the stories about what might have been the problem with him because it makes us feel better. Okay, maybe losing PK is not so bad. And that's why we get to where we are, where half of us have talked ourselves back into it. We're talking about, was PK actually a problem? PK's a big ego. That's all there is to it. Had Price never got hurt, there would have never been the divide. We're not having this conversation right now. We're just talking about how psyched we are to have Radulov.
Yep. Yeah, that's, I don't have much to add, but that's exactly it. Montreal does not handle adversity well. That's been true for a long, long time with this organization. You know, I think generally the sort of playing in a big market versus playing in a small market thing can be a bit overstated, but I think the one, when it really does come into play is when things go south, they can snowball really, really, really quickly in a place like Montreal or Toronto. And that's what happened with this season. And yeah, you're right. If Price is healthy, the team makes the playoffs, everyone's fine. And Bergevin and Therrien don't have the leverage, I guess, to go to Molson and pitch him on career suicide.
That feels like a good place for you and I to leave it off. Still got a couple conversations to come up on the podcast. We had Ian Boisvert, who is at the draft. That's a thing. I know we could talk about so much more. We do need to actually mention, before we get out of here, Sean, very exciting news. We've got our new sponsor. Wrangler Jeans. Wrangler Jeans, Sean. Now, have they agreed to be a sponsor? No. Are we getting any kickback from them? Absolutely not. But we are going to make Wrangler Jeans the unofficial and reluctant sponsor of the Montreal Bias. Because Carey Price is now in Wrangler Jeans ads.
Carey and Brett Favre, two of my favorites.
Right. You don't get, I mean, in all the shitty PK Subban news, let's at least realize when it comes to Wrangler Jeans, Brett Favre and Carey Price know their fucking denim.
There is some small consolation to be taken in that. That's true.
I wish I was in some Wranglers right now. I don't even own any, which is why we've made Wrangler Jeans the reluctant sponsor of the Montreal Bias podcast. They don't need to pay us in cash or lip service. We just like them to ship us some fucking denim.
I would be more than happy with that.
Right? Free denim? I mean, you're a guy, people who've known you for a long time know, you know a good pair of jeans.
Famously, yes.
Famously. So anyway, Wrangler Jeans, go buy them. Clearly Cowboys wear them. And Sean and I would like some free denim. And we're not going to stop Wrangler Jeans. I mean, so we should probably just do another one of these in next week, now that we're trying to do them short, because we still got Tampa Bay coming back from the brink. Suddenly they've got the two guys that are supposed to lead. We got Sportsnet shake up. We've added Shaw. We've added Radulov. The draft was interesting. Lucic is in Edmonton. Taylor Hall was traded for Adam Larson. Louis Erickson's joining Vancouver, which is such a great Vancouver move. We got the 2020 lockout, which seems inevitable at this point based on how everyone structured their contracts in the last few days. Russell's still going to sign somewhere, hopefully not Montreal. So there's lots to talk about.
Oh my God, doesn't that seem like that's where it's headed?
It does. So we got all that to do.
He is such a burgeoning player. It's insane.
We'll do this another time. This is the beauty of trying to cut it short, is we'll actually leave people wanting instead of saying, you two, shut the fuck up. We'll be bringing a couple more people on the podcast. We'll do that right now. I'm well. How are you?
Not bad.
Happy July 4.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Doing it right in the U.S.?
Yep. I'm at home now in Connecticut, so... not celebrating much, but it's still a nice holiday.
Not getting up to anything?
No, just hanging out. Watched a lot of baseball today, so.
Oh, yeah, it's good for that, eh?
Yeah, my Nationals played at 11 a.m., so that was a little bizarre, but.
Oh, you mean my Expos?
Yeah, I guess. I did get to see an Expos game in Montreal before they moved, so I'm glad I got to do that.
And you'll get to see them come on up. We'll watch them when they come back.
Yeah, no, I don't know if it'll be the Nationals that go back. I mean,
oh no, it's going to be Tampa Bay or expansion.
Tampa Bay. I was going to say Tampa Bay. Their arena's god awful, and there's no fans there, so it'd be fun to see them go back to Montreal.
It's good. We get if we get Tampa, then we get a team that's actually built on something. Expansion, that takes longer. Getting Tampa, yeah. Then you got a whole system in place. It's nice.
Yeah. No, expansion would be terrible, but. Tampa Bay's got something going there. I like their young pitching staff. It's pretty good.
Always. That's all. They should be the Expos because they keep bringing up this brilliant talent and then letting them go. it's just
seems
right.
Like
it's just
a Montreal, right. A Montreal problem there.
Yeah, it's just right that we get them back. Anyway, we should introduce you.
Sure.
Ian Boisvert here, who we're going to let you say your piece about PK because we got to let everybody say their piece about PK. Sean and I just spent 40-plus minutes dipping into that, but in the interest, because other things have happened, that's what we're going to really get you on here for, is to get into another thing, because you were at the draft in Buffalo, so I want to hear about that, but I'm giving you the mic for a minute here. Make your piece about the fact that PK Subban's gone.
Well, you know, I mean, it's something that, you know, I never thought would happen. When I was driving up to Buffalo, you know, I keep getting alerts like there's rumors between them and Edmonton, and I'm getting texts from my family about family I haven't even spoken to in a long time. Like, what's the deal on Dreisaitl? Is he coming to Montreal? I'm like, I don't think so. when he was dealt on Friday, it was heartbreaking. I'm still very, very upset. It's something that I never thought happened. But at the end of the day, there's no way you can slice this as a hockey trade.
Nope.
And I think that's the hardest thing for the Canadiens fans to accept right now, is that this is not a hockey trade. This was a trade to get someone out of Montreal who they believed was an issue. You know, the locker room politics that have been aired out over the last few days is terrible. You see, you know, everybody turning on Max, whether or not we know Pacioretty had anything to do with PK.
You know those Connecticut boys. You can't.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the thing, is like I see my bias showing when I'm like trying to defend Pacioretty.
Well, it's an appropriate podcast for biases.
Sure, absolutely. But, you know, it's hard when people are saying like Pacioretty ran him out of town, and I just don't buy it.
I don't buy that. I think Bergevin and Therrien ran him out of town.
That's absolutely the case. I saw a tweet. I can't remember who to attribute it to, but, you know, Therrien asked PK to completely change his game, play a more defensive style game, and he did it to a T, and it still was not good enough.
Yep.
And I think that's the thing. PK could have won the Norris every year, and they still would have found a reason to run him out of town.
Well, you're not allowed to be bigger than the Seash. It's that simple.
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't help that. In my piece, I wrote, you know, that the old man club won, and, you know, you see Guy Lafleur won on June 29th, you know, he was outspoken against PK from the beginning, and he got it on. He won that trade, you know, and they're not making trades with fan bases in mind or even winning in mind. It's this intangible character or locker room attitude that matters, which is the most frustrating for me.
I asked Sean this. Sean and I talked about this a little bit, but since you brought it up, it's worth getting into here. is there a chance that PK actually was a problem in your mind?
Obviously, we have to consider that. None of us are in that room. We don't know that he wasn't a problem. You know, everyone talks about the branding issue. You know, PK cares more about his brand. And I think Connor McKenna said, you know, you replace PK with Jordan and replace PK 76 with Nike or whatever Jordan's doing, and it's not an issue anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the most frustrating thing about the branding is that every player does it. When Camilleri was in town, he wore BioSteel every day.
He wore those stupid fucking Adidas shoes with little toes in them, too.
He had I remember he had the bright yellow mouth guard that had the stupid little logo on the front. No one called him out on that, you know? I mean, it's just, the character assassination is in full effect. The hyenas are out. It's just, it's frustrating to see a player of this character and this magnitude to be traded away because he's a problem. And, you know, maybe they know more than we do. Of course, we have to consider that. Mm-hmm. But, man, I find it hard that a guy that visits a children's hospital has character issues, you know, or that is a problem. And I know that's the tired narrative right now, but show me something that's factual and maybe I'll consider it. But right now I see a guy that donates his time to kids in the Montreal Children's Hospital, time and money. I mean, I think the time is more important, but you can't discount the $10 million he spent there.
No, the Children's Hospital is going to lose money. No doubt about that.
Yeah, certainly. Which is disappointing. They're the biggest losers in this, I think.
It's always bad when sick kids are the biggest losers in something that involves millionaires. But that being said, though, I honestly almost want to tell people, like, forget the Children's Hospital. Pretend that's not part of this. It's still a bad trade.
Absolutely.
That's my problem.
From a hockey
and Bergevin shouldn't think about the Children's Hospital. That's not Bergevin's job to think about the Children's Hospital.
Nope. No, it isn't. And that's 100% fair. But at the same time, it wasn't PK's job either.
No.
You know?
But even if we omit the $10 million and the community service, I still think it's a bad deal. That's my
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you. It's just that the other things, the philanthropy of all of it, makes it that much worse.
It does.
It makes it sting more. It hits us in the heart instead of the head, which is a little it's harder to deal with at that point.
So I think both you and I wrote about this in some sense on rabbithabs.com. People can check that out. A lot of post-PK stuff on the website this week. But in addition to that, on the website, people can find your recent draft report. You went to the draft. You also broke down what the Habs did at the NHL deadline, or free agent sign, not deadline.
Felt like a deadline.
It did feel like a deadline. It's a free agent frenzy. The frenzy.
It was really good this
year. It was
year.
Quite frenziful, no doubt about it. So let's get into those two things. First, I want to hear... people can read what you thought about what the Habs did in the draft on the website. What I want to hear about is what the hell's the draft like? What's it like going to attend the draft? It's long. It seems like it might be exciting for the first hour, boring for the rest. Break it down. What's it like going to the great city of Buffalo to take in an NHL draft?
Well, I mean, the city itself, if you haven't been to Buffalo, I mean, it was quite a hike for me, the 6 hours from where I am. But I absolutely love the city of Buffalo. I thought it was fantastic. I thought they put on an excellent event. The Pakula family did a great job. But if you haven't been to a draft, it's a lot different than you see it on TV. The coolest thing for me was seeing everything happen on the draft floor. You're seeing general managers walk around. And like when the Lars Eller trade happened, I was watching him. He talked to McClellan of Washington, and that was well reported. But I then saw him walk over to Stan Bowman and shake his hand, and that wasn't reported. That was something I did not see on Twitter anywhere, and he's buds with them. Maybe he's just checking in. But a handshake is certainly something when it comes to that.
That's a good point. Or is it? I shake hands all the time at work.
Sure. That's fair, but on the draft floor, everything's
especially
magnified.
Bowman.
Yeah. Another thing... that was pretty interesting for me. The Columbus Blue Jackets organization stayed in the same hotel I did.
Ooh.
So my girlfriend and I are walking out of our room and we're going down the hall and there's a...
You brought your girlfriend to the draft in Buffalo.
Yeah, she's a Habs fan. She's probably going to listen to this at some point.
You've got class written all over you. That's every lady's dream, NHL draft in Buffalo.
No, it was lots of fun. She was lots of fun to have around. But right down the hall, there was a conference room, and, you know, someone knocked on the door and it opened, and I'm like, oh, let's take a peek inside, and we walk by. And I would have if the John Davidson, the Columbus Blue Jackets president of hockey operations, he was standing right there. And I look in, and he kind of gives me a look like, oh, nothing to see here. Just keep walking. And I almost froze, and I was like, and then I just walked away. So that was kind of fun. You know, the crowd is nuts. I have videos on my phone of Bettman being booed. And from where we're sitting, Bettman's speech was a rumor. Like, we did not hear a word he said. It was so loud. They didn't stop until he left the stage.
Beautiful.
So that was lots of fun. But the second day is fun, too, because you go out onto the concourse and you just see prospects walking around everywhere. I saw Will Bitton and his family, the Canadiens' third-round pick. So you just see prospects everywhere. Everybody in the business is in one building for an entire weekend.
That's pretty sweet.
And it's a cauldron for things to happen. It was a really, really cool event.
All right, I'm going to get 20 seconds from you on each of these. The Habs' first-round pick, what'd you think?
I like Sergachev a whole lot. Timmons says he might be physically ready to take on an NHL role. Mm-hmm. That remains to be seen. Obvious Markov replacement. The term McDonough comparable has been thrown around. So that's something for Habs fans to look forward to.
There you go. Secondly, Shaw.
I'm not crazy about him as a player. I honestly think he's a slightly more skilled Brandon Prust. But again, it seems like Mark Bergeron just getting his guy. Contract's not terrible. 3.5 is a movable cap hit, and there's no new movement clause. So I'm okay with the contract. We just have to see him play.
Feels exactly like Prust to me.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is, I was happy. I like Prust. I thought what he did at fine value. It'll be fine.
And I think I interacted with you on Twitter about this earlier. Was like, you know, the Prust contract wasn't terrible, and as soon as he got crappy, we moved him.
Exactly.
You know, and you can do that with Shaw. Shaw's still liked around the league. You'll be able to move him, no problem, if you need to.
As long as NHL GMs don't get smarter, and there's no reason to think they will.
Sure.
There's been no trend that way at all. It's perfect.
No.
Radulov.
This is a huge wild card.
we love them.
I'm a big fan of the signing. I really am, because he's not Semin. Everyone needs to stop throwing that comparable around. It's not even, they're not even similar players. There's a KHL, reporter. He said that there's the three best Russian players in the world are Ovechkin, Malkin, and Radulov, which is a huge, huge, I don't even know what to call it. It's something that Habs fans might freak out about. And,
but it's probably true, or likely.
I think it is likely. I think that the guy is a changed man. He has a kid now. He seemed to base his press conference around him being a dad and being a changed person. So I'm pretty excited to see that play out.
It changed Carey.
Yeah, you know, it certainly did. It certainly did. He's, you know, you see how he's mellowed out. And maybe you can teach a little bit of that to Galchenyuk, maybe mellow him out a little bit.
It's now probably a good time to get out of Russia.
No. I mean, he was making 9 million U.S. in Russia.
Holy shit.
And that's the thing, is people are saying, like, oh, he's not really committed. Well, if he wanted,
commitment.
If it was just about money for him, he would have stayed in the KHL.
Yeah,
you know,
like I say, getting out of Dodge right now is probably a good idea in Russia.
Sure, absolutely.
And finally, any other of the moves? I mean, Eller's gone. We signed some 6th, 7th defensemen. What sticks out?
Well, it's the number of defensemen we have now at this point. We have 8.
Plethora.
We have 8 defensemen on one-way contracts. You know, that's not good. And you know, it'd be silly to sit here and think they're all going to start the season with the Habs next year. But, you know, Bergeron has to start pulling some strings. I think Emelin's the easy one to go, because on July 1st, his contract became a modified no-trade clause.
Perfect.
So he's probably on the way out. You have to think that David Dernay is going
to
get, you know, a good sniff.
You hope to think.
From Bergevin, he's a wild card for me, because Therrien just loves him so much, but there's just, like, the roster space for kids just isn't there.
That's fair. And, yeah, there's too many players on the team at the moment, so there's bound to be more movement. We will hopefully podcast more this summer. We'll see how this all draws out when things happen. I think we always say that. We'll do it again. We'll gladly have you back on. Imbovaric, always contributing great stuff to the Montreal Bias. That's this podcast. Always great when you contribute to the podcast, as well as rabbithabs.com. You can find your breakdown of the NHL draft, your thoughts on what happened post July 1, all that on the website. Now, of course, always contributing to the forum. Anything you're working on at the moment?
I was thinking about putting something together, an analytic approach on how to squeeze the best out of Andre Markov at the moment. Because he's our best member. He's our best left-handed defenseman at the moment, and he's a little long in the tooth. And it's going to take a lot of smart maneuvering from Therrien and Muller just to get the best out of him, and we'll see how that goes.
Kirk's back, baby.
Yeah.
It's all going to be good. Thanks, Ian. Great to have you on, as always. So there we go. Thanks to everybody who stopped by the podcast today. Much appreciated. The new format for the Montreal Bias podcast in this post-PK era. This Zach is the only Habs fan on the podcast now. Sean's trying to feel himself out in agnosticism.
Yeah, I'm just wandering around in the wilderness like the Hulk.
I like that. So that's the image we'll leave on. It's just Sean O'Neill sadly hitchhiking beside the sideway. That's what happens when you get deep into these sad ones. Beside the highway, we'll get that music like Stewie's got on the way out. That'll do us. That's the saddest fucking podcast we ever did.
It can't get worse, right?
No, it deserves a country song, which is apt, because fucking Nashville, good for you. You got a special boy.